Hi, I'm Kevin Clark, chief correspondent and senior editor at America Magazine. Today I'm speaking with the director of Jesuit Refugee Services in the Middle East and North Africa, Father Nawras Samoor.
Yeah.
So can you tell us a little bit about the work that you're doing?
Actually, we are present as the JRS, Jesuit Refugee Service, in Syria, Lebanon, Turkey, and Jordan. We have projects in all those countries. We started in 2008 with Iraqis, with Iraqi refugees. But after the problems in Syria, now the main work we do is with Syrians within Syria and in neighboring countries, as I said, in Jordan, Lebanon, and Turkey.
What are you doing within Syria? I mean, it seems like a very dangerous place to work these days.
Actually, it is. It's dangerous, but still we have, in our centers, we try to do our best for helping IDPs, and the number, it's something like 4 million so far.
IDP, for people who don't know, that's internally displaced people.
Internally displaced people, exactly. Yeah. Internally displaced people. Actually, we are in Homs, Aleppo, and Damascus. We have our centers, and we have sometimes some activities, so-called outreach, in some places where we are not present in direct contact with people, but we have partners to help refugees, internally displaced people.
So, and in terms of help, are you providing them with food, lodging, clothing? What kind of things are happening?
We have three sectors of services, if you like. First, it's all kind of emergency services we have in terms of food and non-food items. In terms of food, each family registered in our centers receives monthly a food basket, which is pretty enough for 6 people for the basic needs in terms of food. Beside that, we have our field kitchen in Aleppo, serving 17,000 daily hot meal for people in shelters, and in rural Damascus, serving 5,000 daily hot meal in people in shelters as well. So in terms of food, we have so far 35,000 families registered in our centers and in our outreach activities, receiving a monthly food basket, and we have our kitchen serving 22,000 daily hot meal.
That's across the country, 22,000?
Yeah. In Aleppo mainly and rural Damascus.
Now, is the government, are you guys it? I mean, in terms of social services and emergency services to people, the Free Syrian Army, I don't imagine that they're providing much help, or the Syrian government. Are you guys about the only players in town in terms of helping IDPs?
We are not alone. No. There's a lot of initiatives, local initiatives. There's the Syrian Red Crescent, which is present. There's agencies of UN working with Syrian Red Crescent. There's some civil society working as well. So we have all those, and we are in good contact with everybody, and we have Caritas as well present. We have initiative from Orthodox Church as well. We are not alone, and thank God, because nobody is able to face those problems alone, I would say. So thank God we have all those people working. But still, all the work we do, it's not enough to answer and to respond to the whole problem. So in terms of food, I told you, now the same families receiving non-food items, if you like. It's about mattresses, blankets, clothing for winter, for summer, for children mainly. All kind of hygienic kit, and sometimes cash support for rent. All those things we do in terms of emergency. That's the first field of activities. The second one, it's about healthcare, where we try to help people, persons, individuals who have chronic diseases like diabetes, like hypertension, like triglyceride, and sometimes psychiatric as well sickness. So it's about civilians. It's always about civilians, and we try to offer to them the medicine they need, because they are not able anymore to afford those medicines. We have as well our clinic in Aleppo with a network of some doctors volunteering with us, and we try to, you know, to give the first help to people who are in need.
Are you dealing with a lot of wounded people because of the shelling and the fighting?
No, at all. With civilians, only with civilians for chronic diseases and for some other diseases, you know. But sometimes we refer people to the hospital if there's a need for a little surgery, you know, mainly for women for giving birth, to help them to give birth. That's in Damascus and in Homs and in Aleppo.
Now, are there lines of control where there's the Syrian Free Syrian Army is in control, and the other side where the government is in control?
Or our centers are in the areas of the under the control of the government, and we work with IDPs in those areas actually. Mm-hmm. And but people coming from everywhere, you know, in Damascus, for example, we have people coming from Aleppo, from Idlib, from rural Aleppo, Idlib, from Homs, from Hama, from everywhere in Syria. And they are IDPs in Damascus. In Aleppo, the same, from rural Aleppo, from sometimes from one area from Aleppo to the other area, or from one area from Damascus. Sometimes this displacement, it's about something like 200 meters only, you know. You have a very hot area, and it's under bombardment, and there's fighting, so people try to flee and to escape those dangerous areas to come to something like only 200 or 300 meters to find a much more secure place. Although there's no more a secure place for 100% right now in Syria, because I would say it's random death. Blast could happen everywhere, mortars could fall everywhere, fighting could happen everywhere, and that's it. But still, there are some areas who are much more secure than others.
When we see images of a city like Aleppo that seems like it's being bombarded almost every day, what are the conditions that the people are living under? That you're now, they're coming to your center, which I presume is in somewhat physically good shape. But what homes are they leaving? What's happening in their home life?
I would say, you know, everybody in Syria would be today affected psychologically speaking. I mean, fear, anxiety, and all kind of, you know, stress, non-certainty. There's no certainty anymore. Incertainty, it's the common word for whole Syrian. If there's something unifies all Syrians today, it's uncertainty and fear.
Yeah.
So that's for sure for everybody, and I would say nobody has today in Syria the monopoly of suffering. All Syrians suffer. You know, it's not only about having people, you know, bad guys, or from one hand, and on the other hand you have good guys. No, it's not like that. It's not like that at all.
Yeah. Yeah, in fact, that's the hardest part for Americans trying to make sense out of the Syrian civil war. You know, on some people think we should be supporting the Free Syrian Army more. Some people think we should stay out of it completely. But then on the other hand, many people are worried about what the government of Bashar Assad might be capable of doing, or what some of the groups that are fighting against him might be capable of doing. Can you make any sense out of what's happening for us?
I would like, if you try to do something as a country, as U.S. Country, it's about to support all process of peace. I mean, fighting and giving arms and giving weapons, it's much easier to give people hope. Hope, it's not going to come from arms, I would say. It's not, I mean, there's no solution by doing war. I mean, if we are going to have at the end one winner and one loser, it's not going to solve the problem for sure, according to me anyway. So, problem, it's a political, it's social, it's economic. That's the problem. So, it's not about having one winner and one loser. So it's about really giving peace and hope to all Syrians to have a united Syria for everybody, inclusive Syria for the right, for with justice, you know, and with the principle of democracy and and with the justice done for everybody. I mean, a lot of victims, they need and they cry maybe justice.
Mm-hmm.
That's my opinion, and it's not going to happen through arms, according to me anyway.
Is the Christian community particularly vulnerable, and because of that, is it possible that they have is there a way that the Christian community can fulfill a special role in the current resolving the current conflict?
According to me, I would say the Christian community, like other communities. I mean, we suffer like others. We don't suffer more than others. We don't suffer less than others. Christian, like others, suffer. And as I said, monopoly of suffering, nobody has the monopoly of suffering. But Christian, they have their own reasons to be much more afraid than others, because the recent history of the region shows us, if you like, that Christian has been the much losers of in Iraq, in Lebanon, mm-hmm. in Egypt recently, you know. So why that? I would say because the Christian are the weakest in terms of the community making and the making up of the social tissue of Syria. They are the weakest because they are everywhere. They don't have their own areas to be a Christian, a pure Christian area. They don't have, let's say, political parties in terms of Christian political parties. They don't have. But I would say, on the other hand, that could be a grace for us, because the vocation of Christian is to be with everybody and for everybody. It's too difficult. It's not easy at all. It's a kind of, adventure without any warranties or guarantees for the future. But that's the gospel in somehow, if you like.
Mm-hmm.
And nobody, I mean, if I make the decision to stay in Syria and a lot of others make the same decision to stay in Syria, other Jesuits, other religious, other laymen and women, you know, that's a personal decision. And if there's someone would like to leave, I mean, I have nothing to tell him. I would say just may God bless him when he's leaving. So it's a personal decision in very Christian world, it's a vocation now to stay in Syria and to be a Christian and to try to be the witness of the gospel, of the principle of the gospel, of non-violent and based on the principle of the gospel in terms of, you know, the right of the people to be, the dignity of everybody, the justice for everybody, and that's it. I would say.
You told me you're a native of Aleppo, which is a city that has now endured months and months of house-to-house fighting and bombardment and,
exactly.
and all sorts of atrocities have taken place. When you look at your city, what do you see now? What's happening to your hometown?
Unfortunately, a lot of very, very important site in terms of the heritage and the of the humanitarian heritage, you know, like the old market of Aleppo, the souk of Aleppo, as you would call it, like a lot of other places, a very old mosque, very old churches. I mean, they have been a lot affected, and some of them completely ruined, and that's really pity. But still, I mean, some people, they say that the demolishment of Aleppo, it's like Berlin after the Second War. I mean, I don't know if that's true or not, but still, it's very, very damaged. It's very, really damaged. That's pity. That's really sometimes could be for me, a source of sorrow in somehow. But still, the most important loss for me as a Syrian, it's the Syrian people themselves, I would
mm-hmm.
say, about a human being, about, I mean, I couldn't imagine that we Syrians, we are able to be violent until that such point of violence. So that's the most important damage, I would say.
Yeah, and it might take a very long time, even with peace comes, to make peace again, to reconcile all these communities, I guess.
Exactly.
Is there any more cause for hope today, do you think?
I hope so. I mean, that's our only hope. I mean, no other solution but dialogue. Dialogue, and which is inclusive, which could gather everybody to have, you know, an idea about what we are going to have for future Syria, what shape of Syria would like to have.
Mm-hmm. But each day, now they're talking about late November to hold these talks, and I don't hear anything about a ceasefire, so the fighting is going to continue right up until, assuming they can get these talks to begin.
And it's much more intense, I would say, the fighting, unfortunately, right now.
Yeah, because each side is trying to grab as much territory as they can, I suppose.
Exactly, yeah. Exactly.
Do you think a united, you talked earlier about a united Syria, is it still possible after all this to have a united Syria at the end, assuming there's progress towards peace talks? Can Syria be put back together?
I hope so. I mean, I couldn't imagine Syria very divided and fragmented, which is the case right now, I would say. Yes, it's fragmented. But I hope, yes. I mean, I couldn't imagine myself, I'm not able to go to my homeland in Aleppo without such a lot of difficulties and, you know, a lot of risks. And I hope Syria would still always be united. That's my hope. But if it's possible, it's too difficult, but still possible, yes.
Okay, we've been speaking with Father Naras Amour, who's the director of Jesuit Refugee Services for the Middle East and North Africa. Right now, JRS Middle East North Africa is dealing with hundreds of thousands of people. Is that correct?
We are in touch in
refugee camps,
like 200,000 to 250,000 people, something like that. Yeah.
And the winter is coming on. Do you have any special concerns about that?
I mean, my only concern is security. Winter, it's hard for sure in terms of giving, you know, a safe refuge and shelter to people. But the biggest concern is security of people, mainly civilians. I mean, we have to have such protection for all civilians in Syria who suffer a lot. And believe me, the most part of civilian of Syrian people, they are voiceless, unfortunately, because now the voice is given to extremism. But the majority of Syrians, they are really silent, and we try to be that voice for majority of Syrians who would like to have to regain peace, to regain, you know, united Syria and security for everybody and justice for everybody.
Okay. Well, thank you very much, Father. If you would like
thank
to find
you.
Out more, thank you, Father. If you'd like to find out more about what Jesuit Refugee Services are doing in the Middle East and North Africa, visit jrsmena.org. That's jrsmena.org, and you can be kept up to date on some of the direct services that the Jesuit Refugee Services is engaging in, and some of the appeals they'll be offering as the winter progresses. Thank you so much, Father Samor, and God bless you with all your work.
Sure. Thank you.